WCWS.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wiscommon Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's another beautiful day up north. It is Friday, May 19th, 2023. A rather almost chilly 47 degrees up here on the lake. Quite a range in temperatures. It's 44 over in Amory, but it is 60 degrees in Madison and Waukesha. Let's see, Wausau coming in at 54 degrees. And for many folks, the smoke from the Western Canadian wildfires is no longer as high up in the sky as it was blowing past. And so that may cause some breathing difficulties for some folks today who might want to spend the time indoors. Coming up this morning, Democrats in the Wisconsin legislature are giving Republicans an earful on the GOP's inability to pass clean legislation that doesn't have strings attached. For example, there's a new fund that is getting great press for the Republicans about a big fund to clean up PFAS, industrial chemicals from water, but it's got strings attached to it. And of course, we've already talked about a shared revenue plan that restricts how local governments do business to the point where one legislator called it nothing more than a polished turd. So we'll talk a bit about that. We will go over some national headlines with Kia Vakil, Courier Newsroom's national correspondent. Then in our 7 o'clock hour, a very busy hour, right off the top, we will be talking to State Representative Francesca Hong and a representative from Next Gen America, which puts together a list of young multicultural leaders from around the country. And Representative Hong's name is on that top 10 list of names to watch for young leaders around the country as we need them to pull us back from what has been a generation of cynicism and short-sighted budget slashing and right-wing culture wars. And Representative Hong is definitely one of the right people to have on the front lines for what lies ahead. Coming up on Monday, Motherhood Monday, the ladies from Motherhood for Good will be with us, and they will talk about the Moms Mental Health Initiative as part of Mental Health Awareness Month. Oh, and we have Brewers tickets to give away, too. Stay tuned. Coming up at 6:50, you can answer a Brewers trivia question, and you could win two tickets to next Tuesday night game versus Houston. And along the way, as always, phone lines open at 844-967-2789. And Aaron Zommers is here as well. Aaron, good morning.
Good morning.
I have breaking news to share with you. We've been working to get the show put together here that I did not have time to tell him that right on schedule at 6 a.m. came this story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel with this headline: Democrat Kristen Lierley weighs 2024 run against Green Bay Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher.
Well, once again, she outshines us all.
I know. How many times have we said we are merely the compost pile from which others emerge and bloom? And so Bill Glauber has that article that we knew was coming up, talking about Kristen considering a run for Congress in the 8th District. And I can tell you from conversations with her, it is far from a done deal. It is merely something she's considering. But having been both a candidate and a reporter, I know that as a reporter, if you find out that somebody fairly well known is considering a run for something, you're going to write a story about it. And so while there's no decision yet, no announcement yet, just the fact that, you know, Congressman Gallagher got a free pass in the 8th District last time around. Democrats didn't even field a candidate. So for Kristen to at least provide some chatter, maybe that helps recruit somebody else who's interested in running. But anything but a free pass is going to help up there in Northeast Wisconsin.
Yeah, absolutely. And if she did decide to run, I'm sure her current field would miss her, but she'd do an excellent job.
Right. And it's I'm sure something that she's weighing is that she has a leadership role with the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and she would be less able to do some of that work advocating on behalf of OBGYNs. She is, of course, a party involved in the lawsuit to overturn the state's 1849 abortion ban. So she's got a lot on her plate. And not to take anything away from Bill Glauber, you should go to the Journal Sentinel and read the article. But I'm going to give away the end of it, where he says, Lyerly said if she runs, she'll be ready for the challenge. She said, it's not going to be easy, but I did my OBGYN residency with four kids under 10. I have no fear of hard work. True.
Yeah.
that checks out. She does not have any fear of hard work. She apparently must have a fear of sleep, because I don't know when she rests, given everything that she does. But just one more thing to add to her to-do list is to consider this potential race for Congress. And she joins us on Monday mornings and Thursday mornings. Needless to say, we'll have something to talk about on Monday morning. And if she decides to run,
either way, it's something to talk about.
What's that?
Either way, it's something to talk about for sure.
Oh, yeah. Either way. But of course, I'll be pressing her right away at 6:33 Monday morning saying, hey, what's new? Want to tell us anything? So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. So again, look for that in the Journal Sentinel. All right. With that headline out of the way, it means we can now get to a couple of the other stories that are making news. And we're going to do that after the break. As mentioned, you know, the PFAS legislation that was introduced. And again, you know, the headline is quite glowing. It says, you know, Wisconsin Republicans vote to spend $125 million to combat PFAS pollution. But the devil is in the details, of course, and we will review that for you. And then when Keel Vakil is here, we'll talk about North Carolina politics. And again, a reminder of how important the Wisconsin Supreme Court election was, because North Carolina has now instituted a 12-week abortion ban after a Supreme Court loss and a turnaround by a Democrat who decided to become a Republican, spur of the moment. We'll have all that and more this hour. This is Up North News Radio for Friday. So often I give a musical assignment to Aaron, and he comes through later in our history lesson and music break. We will include that on this day in 1998, DMX debuted at number one with his first album called It's Dark and Hell is Hot. And I said, can you find at least 15 seconds with clean lyrics that we can play as a bumper? And I think that's pretty much everything off the album you could play for us, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
We'll have more coming up at the 6:50 mark, where, again, you can also win Brewers tickets. This is normally where I tell you some sports, but the Brewers were off traveling down to Tampa. They will take on the Rays. Where's my handy dandy schedule here? Okay, so this evening, Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, and then they come home, and right away on Monday night, they play the Houston Astros. Monday, Tuesday, then Wednesday afternoon, and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday against the San Francisco Giants, and a Sunday afternoon game against the Giants. So that's part of that 7-game homestand coming up starting Monday. And let's go specifically to one game in that homestand, and that would be next Tuesday against the Astros. 6:40 would be the first pitch, and you could have your butt in a really nice seat at American Family Field. So stay tuned for your chance to win that at 6:50. And a reminder that if you're in the Fox Valley, you should be listening to the Brewers on Oshkosh Air Support 98.3 and 1100 AM. And if you're anywhere near Richland Center, listen to News from the Center to catch the Brewers 107.7 and 1450 AM. Let's start first with the new PFAS plan that was put forward. And as I said right before the break, Republicans are getting some good press for it, because it's being advertised as putting even more money in than what Governor Tony Evers proposed to fight this continued discovery of industrial chemicals in what should be the cleanest and purest water in the world. But recall that the very first thing Republicans did on the Joint Finance Committee, which writes the state budget for the legislature, was they removed hundreds of proposals from Governor Evers, which would include that roughly $100 million to fight PFAS contamination. It would involve testing, investigation, mitigation, grants to local governments, new positions, also new standards. The Republicans removed all of that. They put in $125 million that they say will go toward cleaning up these chemicals. But much like the shared revenue bill, it's the strings that are attached that have people saying why. And it's why the Democratic legislators on the Joint Finance Committee all voted no on the plan. And put simply, it's the string is that it's going into a separate fund, and the fund can be accessed as each allocation is basically signed off by the Joint Finance Committee. So again, the legislature is micromanaging rather than allowing the Department of Natural Resources to do their job. And you might recall a couple of days ago, I mentioned that a separate bill had been introduced by some Republican legislators on PFAS contamination. But the entire bill just reads like a micromanagement of the DNR. And what's missing from the bill is pretty much any accountability or any consequences if any of the polluters are found. It's all about making the DNR do this and that. And by the way, one of those things is the DNR has to make testing less expensive because, again, the legislature is only looking out for the business entities that might have to pay for the cost of the testing. And so to put this new PFAS fund as something separate that, again, has to come to the legislature each time, it really turns the Joint Finance Committee into what they've really wanted to do is have the Joint Finance Committee run the state. They've wanted, if they would have received a supermajority in the last election and been able to override all of Governor Tony Evers' vetoes, it wouldn't matter if there's a Democrat in the governor's office. They would simply say that everything has to come to this group of 16 lawmakers with 12 Republicans and 4 Democrats. And these 12 Republicans, or more correctly, the two chairs of the Joint Finance Committee, one Senate Republican, one Assembly Republican, would be able to call the shots on, well, if they'd have had their way, all of the federal pandemic aid that did so much good, saved the state economy, and allowed us to have this $7 billion surplus that they're still sitting on, by the way. But they wanted to be able to control all of that money, much like they want to control all of the surplus and turn it into tax cuts, again, primarily geared toward the very wealthy. And I know, some people have said, wait a minute, look at that new shared revenue bill. Look at all of that money that they're putting in to send more money to local units of government. So I guess they don't want to turn all of it into tax cuts. My response would be, well, not so fast. Let's remember where we left off on the shared revenue bill. First off, you had Republicans in the Assembly create a bill that, yes, does share more money with local units of government, but only about half as much as what Governor Evers proposed. Evers and others know that the state sharing revenue with local governments has been flat or falling pretty much this entire millennium, this entire century, since the early 2000s. It's been stuck. State tax revenue continues to grow at a rate double that of the revenue growth by local governments. Local governments have to put up with all these restrictions on levy limits and spending and what have you. And so now they've created this new bill that theoretically would send more money out, but only if the bill passes. Remember what happened night before last. The day Wednesday started with the possibility, Governor Evers expressing optimism that negotiations were going well between himself, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, and Senate Republican leader Devin Lemahieu. But by the end of the day, Robin Voss had some kind of a temper tantrum, took his ball, and went home. He and Assembly Republicans, they marched out of the building, and they went and stood on the Capitol steps outside to have this united front. And Robin Voss said, "We are done negotiating. It's our way or the highway. The bill that we want. The bill that has all of these strings attached to local governments. This bill that gives only half as much money as Governor Evers wants to at a time of a record surplus." And those strings are pretty outrageous as well. They, for example, don't allow for local advisory referendums. They pretty much mandate staffing levels for police and fire. Again, the micromanaging that's done here at the local level is really something. There's also, for folks up north, they should know that the Assembly Republican plan also includes a very serious new obstacle in terms of potential future purchases of land by the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program. Now, for folks who maybe have heard of the stewardship program, named for a couple of past Wisconsin governors, the stewardship program is a way for landowners to sell land to the state or to local governments or nonprofit organizations in a way that allows the land to maintain wildlife habitats, maintain sensitive natural areas, but you also expand opportunities for outdoor recreation. You would be able to maintain sustainable forestry. All of that happens thanks to the Stewardship Fund, which was historically a very bipartisan creation, long respected. But more recently, as more right-wing Republicans have been elected to and taken control of the legislature, the Stewardship Fund has come under fire. And it's been sold as something that basically hermetically seals a piece of land and that nobody can use it, and that it then becomes overgrown, when that's not the case at all. In fact, if you allow that land to go into the stewardship program, sustainable forestry can continue to happen. That creates jobs in the timber industry, the paper industry, and so forth. You probably get more outdoor recreation, which brings more dollars into the economy. What we hear from Republican lawmakers is that, oh no, it restricts, you know, the economy. It takes things off the tax rolls when it does not, in many cases. What they're looking for instead is essentially saying that landowners, instead of selling it as part of the stewardship program, would essentially have to sell it to some other private sector buyer who might want to just come in and pave the whole thing, turn it into a golf course, turn it into a strip mall, whatever the case may be. Sure, that brings in money to the economy too, but at what price? And so what Republicans are doing now in this shared revenue bill is saying that, well, now local units of government have to sign off before anything could be sold as part of the stewardship program. And by the way, local governments have to do this. They have to approve it, but only north of Highway 8. Just an arbitrary figure. Picking a highway, could have been 8, could have been 29, could have been 10, but picking one area, with all Republican members of the legislature, by the way, and putting in this obstacle toward landowners who would like to see their land in the stewardship program. It would make it easier for developers to go to town boards and county boards and city councils and say, hey, you know, you really want to help us, don't you? We'd rather put the strip mall here. It just completely undercuts what the stewardship program would be about. But here's the thing. The Assembly Republicans took their ball and went home on Wednesday, didn't want to negotiate anymore. Robin Voss said the negotiations are done. They passed a bill. The Senate Republican leader, Devin Lemieux, said on Thursday, we didn't sign off on this. And in fact, there's a couple of provisions we're probably going to change. And of course, Governor Evers isn't going to sign what Assembly Republicans put forward. It has way too many strings attached to it, not just the ones I mentioned, but many more. And so, no, Speaker Voss, the time for negotiations isn't over. The time for negotiations is right here, right now. Assembly Democratic leader Greta Neubauer said as much, said, this thing doesn't cut the mustard. We need to go back to the negotiating table. And you do. You simply do. There is no deal yet. Unless, and you'd have to be really cynical to believe this, but unless there was never an intent to pass a new shared revenue bill, in which case that money from the record surplus doesn't go to local units of government and they can continue to push it toward tax cuts for the very wealthy. Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil joins me next on Up North News Radio on a Friday morning. We'll be back.
Council. The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
And now we're at the bottom of the hour and time to get our weekly update from Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil out in California. Kia, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, here we are, as we're recording this, still wondering if the debt ceiling is going to lead to default. We don't think anything that massive is going to happen between now and then. But again, the back and forth that's going on has already affected President Biden in that he's not going to be making the full trip that he had planned overseas. So whatever happens budget-wise, this whole debate is at least having some actual impact on American government, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was supposed to do an extended visit to Asia, and he's going to cut that short to presumably, you know, stay to return to Washington to try to prevent a default, because, you know, that's currently where things are headed. You know, there's the earliest we could default is June 1st, but, you know,
well, and so let's do that. This is, we are starting exactly how you would expect 99% of these interviews to go. Let's go ahead and say right here between you and me, no president has to do this. We have the internet, we have telephones. This is all optics because, you know, if there's some kind of a breakthrough or a breakdown, you know, you've got the American president is overseas and he didn't care enough to be here. He's going to be sitting in his living room at the White House just stewing while this goes on. So let's admit this is all for show. No matter which party is in what spot, it's silly.
It's to prevent a bad headline. And it's a decision that unfortunately makes sense because, you know, I'm sure his team smartly does not want Biden travels to Asia while America faces down economic disaster. And if that was Trump, it'd be the same way. You know, we saw what Ted Cruz, that was a little different because that was a natural disaster, but we saw what he got when he went on a vacation while his constituents suffered. So, but yes, like you're saying, Biden has deputized a few people to negotiate for him. Republicans have some negotiators. So it is a little bit of a dog and pony show, but, you know, it makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's bad. I just think that not enough times is it said in news reports like this that we all know it's not like it used to be. The president's not getting on a steamship and he's going to be crossing the Atlantic for the next, you know, 3 weeks. It doesn't work like that. But yeah, you do what you sometimes have to for the optics. Okay, with that diversion aside, getting back to things here, we've been hearing by and large from Republicans on the right wing who say that, you know, they're going to walk if this thing doesn't have enough cuts. But we are definitely hearing rumblings as well now from folks in the Democratic caucuses looking specifically, say, at work requirements in some of the social services programs and saying they might be prepared to walk. And again, there's while everybody says the right things, we're negotiating, we have optimism, there certainly are more signs than before that this is going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is on one hand, you have Republicans that are governed by the fringe wing, the right, the extreme right wing of their caucus in the House. And so that wing has very little interest, does not really care if the government is functioning properly or, you know, if, frankly, I don't know that they care if there's a default. I don't know if the Matt Gaetzes and the Chip Roys of the world would be that upset. So they will, in that sense, they have some leverage because if they just don't care, then, you know, if they shoot the hostage, then Democrats have to find a way to be the adults in the room. Now, does that mean you give in to exorbitant cuts that devastate families? Of course not. And that's sort of what we've seen over the past few months. The problem is as we get closer to that date, you know, if Republicans aren't budging, then it becomes, do Democrats, you know, negotiate as they seem to be doing on certain things, some of which are, you know, less objectionable than others, you know, permitting reform. There's some debate about that on a bipartisan level, which would just make it easier for natural gas and clean energy projects to get approved. But things like work requirements, you know, let's say you're a 48-year-old or 52-year-old woman who is, you know, chronically ill, but not disabled enough to get disability, and you rely on SNAP or Medicaid for food assistance or health insurance, this bill would force you to work to get those benefits. And to be clear, most of these people getting these benefits do work, and this would target, you know, a specific subset of them. But it is really hard to get government benefits in this country. It's already a pain, and this would only make it harder and could take coverage away from millions of people. And Democrats are opposing those requirements because that is what would happen. And that is a red line for folks like John Fetterman and Elizabeth Warren. And I think you'll see other Democrats come out and say that's a red line too.
And there's also on top of that, the, I guess what you'd say is the deficit hypocrisy, because some of the things Republicans are demanding would actually add to the deficit. They would actually add to debt. But again, because they sound good, it doesn't matter as much that these things actually make the problem worse.
Yeah, exactly. And I believe it was yesterday there was an analysis came out. Republicans want to extend the Trump tax cuts. And this analysis showed that that would add to the deficit by $3.5 trillion, which is, you know, a lot of money. That's a made up amount of money that no one can comprehend. You could fill, you know, one of the Great Lakes with that amount of money, probably. And so, yeah, it's pure hypocrisy. And to be clear, you know, neither side has been ideologically consistent on debt over the last couple decades, but Democrats don't hold the economy hostage to try to cut programs or reduce the debt. Biden has reduced the debt. His Inflation Reduction Act looks like it will reduce the debt by some amount. And so, you know, right now we're in this really potentially dangerous position because, you know, Republicans want to give tax cuts to people, but not let, you know, poor families in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Ohio and Iowa and all over the country, you know, get a couple $100 in food assistance a month so they don't starve.
You cover politics well beyond Washington for us, for Courier Newsroom and for Up North News. And that includes, I guess, this week, most of the state-based coverage went to North Carolina, which had a bit of a political earthquake thanks to just one member doing something so unheard of in terms of where she was and where she is. And as a result, North Carolina now has one of the stronger abortion bans out there, makes it even tougher for pregnant women in the South to have options. What took place this week there?
Yeah. And so this is a really perfect example of why people hate politics and politicians. So Tricia Cotham was a former state representative in North Carolina who, you know, was served years ago, won an election as a Democrat last November by running on protecting abortion rights. Years ago, she'd shared her abortion story on the floor to talk about why it's important to preserve abortion. In January, she co-sponsored a bill to codify Roe v. Wade into state law. Fast forward a couple months, she is upset that Democrats, you know, don't bow down to her, I guess. And, you know, maybe there's, who knows why. Either way, she either abandoned her principles completely or just never had them to begin with, became a Republican, and voted to pass this abortion ban. And that's critical because she was the final vote they needed to override the governor's veto.
Yeah, so there's a Democratic governor there, we should point out.
Exactly.
But again, that because of this one representative, this one legislator, this one woman who is just one of the most stark 180s you've ever seen in politics, the governor's veto was overridden.
Exactly. And that what does that mean? That means women in North Carolina cannot have abortions after 12 weeks unless, you know, their life is in danger or they were a victim of rape or incest or the baby's, you know, the fetus's life, you know, is not viable. Mm-hmm. And but more importantly, that may sound reasonable, 12 weeks, because in comparison to a 6-week ban, maybe it is. You know, that's what Florida's doing. That's what other states are doing. But the bill also creates restrictions on clinics that could force 6 of the 14 clinics in North Carolina to close because they don't meet those restrictions. It also forces more in-person visits to get a medication abortion. It establishes a 72-hour waiting period before you can, after your initial visit, to then get the medication. So it will make it harder for women in North Carolina to get abortions. It will lead to doctors being afraid of what treatment they can give. It will lead to doctors leaving, as we've seen in Idaho and Wisconsin and other states that have bans. It is a disaster. And it is going to reverberate around that state for years. And it is not a coincidence that this happened after the Supreme Court in that state basically gave Republicans a green light to gerrymander themselves into power.
Yeah, we should note that as well, that they too had a very important state Supreme Court election. And because conservatives, you know, won a majority on the court, all of these things unfolded this week the way they did, with that still mysterious flip of this lawmaker. What exactly was the personal slight that would cause you to do something so frankly insane, my word, not anybody else's, but that's the mystery of North Carolina that we're just going to have to continue to work on. So now let's take it down to Florida, where you have two residents there who may be running for president against each other, Governor Ron DeSantis and former President Donald Trump. And DeSantis is basically making it sound like abortion is going to be the dividing line, because former President Trump doesn't give a heartfelt thumbs up to a 6-week ban, whereas Ron DeSantis just signed it. And again, we've said this before, but they sure are fighting over how to win a base, how to win a battle and lose the war when it comes to the general election, it seems.
That's exactly right. You know, Republicans have had this problem, both parties, but especially Republicans have had this part of problem for years, where to win the primary, they have to go as far to the right as is possible, because their voters have been, frankly, many of them have been radicalized by activists, by Fox News. And frankly, you know, some of them really believe this stuff. And so that means DeSantis signs a 6-week law into 6-week abortion ban into law. There is almost no support for that. Even if people don't like abortion, they don't, a very small percentage of people in Florida and the country support 6-week bans. They've done all sorts of radical things there. Trump is now, you know, there's been a lot of reporting that Trump, you know, has tried to shy away from talking about abortion because he knows it's a loser in a general election. But then in the last couple of weeks, you've seen him take credit for, you know, Roe v. Wade being repealed. And it's because he feels that he has to win a primary first. And that's going to, again, could really come back to haunt them in a general, because people do not like abortion bans. They just don't. And there's a lot of evidence that, you know, this extreme drift to the right is not popular with voters. We saw in Jacksonville last night, a Democrat won the mayor's race for just the second time in the past 30 years. So, you know, and she's the first female mayor. Jacksonville was the largest city led by a Republican. It is a traditional Republican stronghold. We saw that in Colorado Springs, a very conservative area historically, that elected a Black independent who's affiliated with the Democratic Party over the Republican. So, you know, voters are crossing over to vote for Democrats, and there's polling out just today in Florida that shows DeSantis's, you know, approval rating has sunk dramatically since he won re-election because of what they've done this session. So this drift to the right, you know, there's no evidence it's helping them with voters in the general election.
No, and even in the states that they do control, there are still voices there reminding them, you know, that they stand outside the American mainstream. I'm thinking specifically of Nebraska, where I believe the legislature is still gummed up by a Democrat who is filibustering so that an anti-trans bill won't pass. And if I saw right here, the Republicans are looking for some kind of backdoor way to use an abortion bill to get their anti-trans language through. So, I mean, these battles go on in the heartland as well, no matter who's controlling the state.
Exactly. And they actually, also the same night North Carolina passed their ban, Nebraska managed to sneak through their abortion ban and their anti-trans ban by combining them together at the last minute. And so into the bill that had already passed. So they basically amended it to add a completely separate issue But by doing that, that actually shows that these are the very same issue. You're banning women from being able to control their bodies and their healthcare choices, and you're banning trans people from being able to make decisions about their healthcare and their life. That is waging war on people. It just is, and their freedom. And that's happening in every state across this country.
Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vikil, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir. Have a great start to the weekend.
You bet.
And we are getting that much closer to Milwaukee Brewers tickets to give away to next Tuesday's game. That's going to be part of our music break and our history lesson. So I'm going to give you the phone number right now. Don't dial it yet. I haven't asked the question yet. 844-967-2789. We will give away those tickets, and we will finish up this hour's conversation coming up in just a bit here on Up North News Radio.
Radio 92.7 WMDX and on the Civic Media app.
It's still not easy watching some of the original rock and rollers as we all hurl headlong toward our senior years, to think that Pete Townshend is 78 years old today, co-founder, guitarist, primary songwriter of The Who, 78 today. Jeffrey Ross Hyman, you'd know him better as Joey Ramone from punk rock pioneers The Ramones. He was born this day in 1951, passed away in 2001. When he started The Ramones, he was just the drummer. Dee Dee was the bass player, and realized he was struggling to play bass and sing at the same time. And so along comes Joey Ramone, and the rest is history. Singer Sam Smith is 31 today. And YouTube personality, I get JoJo Siwa, we describe her as that first, then maybe a singer, actress, whatever all she does. Here's what I do know, Aaron, is that I knew who JoJo Siwa was. I've seen little clips. But the other day I was talking about that NBC show, That's My Jam, the one that Jimmy Fallon hosts. And she did Bohemian Rhapsody in the style of Eminem. And I got to tell you, I was really impressed.
Impressed is not the word I expected, but that's a surprise to be sure, but a welcome one.
It was. It was like, wow, that, you know, you can't just do that on the fly. That does take a little bit of talent there. On this day in 1962, there was a birthday bash for then President John F. Kennedy. Marilyn Monroe was there and performed a little birthday song.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mr. President. Birthday to you.
The after party people have always wondered about. On this day in 1973, Stevie Wonder topped the charts with a song about his wife, You're the Sunshine of My Life.
I'd find myself drowning in mountains. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You are the sunshine of my life.
Number one hit 50 years ago today. On this day in 2018, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, happy 5th anniversary to those young lovers. They had a wedding with an estimated global audience of nearly 2 billion people, and now 1.9 billion of them say they didn't really watch it and they don't really like them. I'm so on the fence about Harry and Meghan. Don't know. Don't care that much either. Peter Gabriel's 5th solo album came out this day in 1986, entitled So. And it had one monster hit on it.
I reach out from the inside. In your eyes, the light, the heat.
And let's see, I already mentioned that in 1998 on this day, DMX debuted at number one with his first album, It's Dark and Hell is Hot. And then let's end on this note. 31 years ago today, the number one song on this day in 1992 was by Billy Ray Cyrus.
Don't tell my heart, my achy, breaky heart. I just don't think he'd understand.
I didn't say that we had the best musical taste in the early 90s, but, you know, we had Billy Ray, who then gave us Miley, so I guess that's something. All right, it's time to put Aaron to work answering the phones here at 844-967-2789. Two tickets to next Tuesday's game. If you haven't won something within the past month, if you're able to have the tickets emailed to you, and if you can go to the game, because these are great seats. Most folks know the Brewers, when they went to the World Series in 1982, came up just short against the St. Louis Cardinals. But who did the Brewers beat in the American League Championship Series to get to the World Series that year? Remember, the Brewers were in the American League back then, so they were in the ALCS, and they beat a team to get to the World Series and play the Cardinals. Who did the Brewers beat in the ALCS in 1982 to get to the World Series? First one with that answer at 844-967-2789 can win tickets, two tickets to next Tuesday's game versus Houston. And again, on a statewide radio network, that's not a lot of people that can go. So if you can and you suspect you know the answer, go ahead and call. First one who calls in is going to be able to win that one. Would you have known the answer to this one, Aaron, if it had been put at you?
Nope, I would not have known it. I would have Googled it, though.
Well, see that, and that's just it. We're giving, there's still plenty of time for folks to Google, and they don't even have to be done by the time the Jeopardy music is over. Get the answer, give us a call, listen to the Brewers on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 and 1100 AM, and also news from the Center and Richland Center, 107.7 and 1450 AM. I'll come back to the shared revenue bill for just a sec here. There, as any newsroom does, we received no shortage of press releases from lawmakers of both sides talking about, you know, how great this bill is to be giving money to local units of government. But from the Democratic side, of course, much more outrage about the strings attached and much more skepticism about whether they actually want to pass a bill to help more local units of government. And I'm going to have to give the prize for best press release to Milwaukee Assembly Representative Ryan Clancy with this headline on it. Republican shared revenue plan is disastrous for Milwaukee. Representative Clancy calls for a clean bill, not a polished turd. Representative Clancy goes on to say the rhetoric around this bill is wrong. Milwaukee is not asking to be saved. We're not asking for a handout or aid or to be rescued. Milwaukee is simply asking to get back more of the tax revenue that it generates rather than surrender to the state, which and that Milwaukee subsidizes communities all across Wisconsin. He says the legislature, this current one, is choking off Milwaukee revenue and has been doing so for two decades. We are asking simply to be choked less. This bill should contain no policy. We should not be dictating terms to local governments starved for funding, whether it's in the city of Milwaukee or the town of Maple. Clancy goes on, the specific policy contained within this bill would be laughable if it wasn't so damaging. It's a laundry list of failed Republican policy ideas and pet peeves slapped without thought onto insufficient crumbs for new shared revenue. So again, simply for referring to the bill as a polished turd, we offer Representative Clancy the award for best press release of the week. In economic news, the new unemployment figures had come out, and one of the folks that I follow on social media, his name is Jake Edwards, his handle is Jake Madtown, and he makes note that Wisconsin has passed 3 million total jobs for the first time and has reached a record low of 2.4%, an unemployment rate of 2.4%, while participation rates continue to rise. So it's no wonder, of course, you know, that we have this record surplus and that the legislature should long ago have come up with constructive ways to put it to work. And yet all we're offered so far is this polished turd. We will have Representative Francesca Hong and a representative from Next Gen America next. Representative Hong is on a list of to watch of national young leaders. Plus, still looking for a winner on those Brewers tickets at 844-967-2789. We'll be back. You're up north.